I'm gonna make myself a note.
Hey everyone, Mr. Devil here, Kenny Danico, three-time Stanley Cup champion of the New Jersey Devils, and you're listening to the Uncle Puckers New Jersey Devils podcast with Chris, Dan, Bobby, and Tony, the Uncle Puckers. Let's go, Devils!
There it goes. It's a long flush. My toilet doesn't run that long.
So is the title of the episode Jiggle the Handle?
That was an 82-game flush there. That was a long
that
one.
Was an 82-game flush, most definitely. Holy shit.
Yeah.
What's up, Dan?
What is going on, Chris?
Not much. Devils are now, they're actually winning. First period just ended in game two of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Devils are up 3-2. Same old.
Yeah,
some pretty goals. It was nice seeing Nolan Foote in the lineup. I like to think maybe if he had stayed healthy this year, he could have been a productive player for us. I do think, though, that he will be on this team next year.
Right.
And but real quick, I was telling you, my wife and daughter are out in California, so they're on their way back. So last night, I got home from work a little late, and my son was upstairs. So I said, hey, you want to come down and watch a movie or something? He's like, yeah, what do you got in mind? Come down, we'll figure it out. He comes down. Now, he likes South Park, but he's never seen the movie.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I put bigger, longer, uncut on.
Yes.
He laughed his ass off the whole movie. And like five awesome. Minutes in, he's like, that's where you got the fucking name for the podcast?
That's it.
I was like, yep.
And then, it probably explains like 500 other things that you say on a daily basis. That I know you do and I do too.
Right.
He's probably heard and never know what the hell is he going on about, you know?
Yep. And I was telling him, I was like, that's what Dan and I always called each other. Like, even look at my phone, his name is his Uncle Fucker.
Yeah.
And, you know, so like when we were coming up with names for the podcast, it was like, we're coming up, like I had a bunch of stupid corny ones and stuff. And then you had said, Puck Off or something.
And I wanted to be crass in some way. Yeah.
Right. So as soon as you said that, it clicked. I'm like, oh, wait, Puck runs with Fuck. It's got to be the Uncle Puckers. It's got to be. There's no other show title for it.
Yeah. But it might be a little goofy. And I do feel for people who are like, what the hell is this stupid name if they didn't know the movie? But, you know, I think enough people.
If you don't know the movie, that's on you. You got to go watch it.
It's highly recommended. I know there's a whole generation of people like your son who probably never heard of this movie, and it's
greatest fun. Musical ever. I mean,
I know. I gotta say, I don't have a long list of favorite musicals, but this is at the top for sure.
It's number one.
Yes,
it is number one. Every song in it is fantastic and hysterical. The whole movie, the plot, everything about it is just so ridiculous and hysterical. I was laughing my ass off last night because I hadn't watched it in forever.
Yeah,
so it was funny.
We did a family viewing with at least a few of the kids. I don't think they were all watched. Maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. And I had kind of waited for a long time. I'm like, okay, I can't show them that movie when they're 5, 7,
right.
You know, even like anytime in grade school is going to be, you know, Stan, it's the clitoris, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know? But we actually had a viewing not too long ago of a movie that we should not have watched as a family.
What?
Poor Things.
I wanted to see it.
It's a good movie. It's very strange, very interesting. And it's totally not a family friendly watch. It is at some places borderline porn. And oh, this is getting uncomfortable to watch with, you know, we all just kind of sat there in our uncomfortability. Usually Evie is like the one who acts like the adult, and she'll look up and she'll turn to me and the wife, go, oh, we can't watch this together. You know?
Right.
Because, you know,
right. The voice of reason in the house.
Yes, exactly. But this time she dropped the ball. So we all sat there like very awkwardly, like, well, it's a good movie.
I haven't seen it. My wife and I were going to watch it the other
night.
Check
it out. Check it out. I think you'll like it. It's very bizarre. It's a strange movie.
Yeah, I heard good things about it. I love Emma Stone. So.
Yeah, and Willem Dafoe. And he's
Willem Dafoe's in it?
Oh, he's in it. He's got this crazy character. It's good. And it's kind of a unique movie. It's not like a lot of other movies. It's
I definitely am going to check it out. It was funny because like I knew like some of the things in the South Park movie, like some of the stuff is dated, and he had like no clue. Like he's like
Operation.
He goes, "Who the hell are the Baldwins?"
Oh yeah, the Baldwins are dead.
Baldwins are dead.
Yeah. Winona Ryder, is that the lady from Stranger Things?
Stranger Things, exactly.
Yeah, she was stupid.
Wow, war, man. Like, wow. But, yeah, the fucking line, you know, America's getting ready to invade Canada after the terrible toll that the Canadians took on the Arquette family.
Yes,
bombing exactly. All those fucking horrible actor families. What a funny, funny movie, man!
That's great. They're geniuses. That's great. I don't know. I know he was in their TV show, but I don't think OJ was in that movie. Did he make an appearance in that?
No,
movie?
No, he wasn't in the movie.
I was going to say that's kind of timely too.
Yeah,
I saw that Tony sent out as the Ford Bronco as a hearse. Yeah.
Oh, the hearse, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure everybody's passing that around because that's a good one. I love
that. Yeah, that is a good one.
He should go to his services in a Bronco hearse. That would be amazing.
OJ's last ride.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's almost time to bury the devil season, too. You know, I mean,
yeah, you can bury it with OJ. Yeah. This season, thank goodness it's over. I mean, there are a couple of things though. They talked a little bit about something I wanted to bring up to you, and they were talking about it. So, you know, the bunch of people, you know, the Pucks and Pitchforks and all the other articles that are out there, and you know, some of the stuff that I think is okay, but you know, it was somebody had written an article. I don't even know who it was, but it was just guys that have to go and stuff, and one of the guys that they had on there to go was Curtis McDermott.
Oh.
I think the Devils need to sign Curtis McDermott.
If not him, somebody who can kind of fill that role. I mean, I think what he was needed for is still needed, and he's pretty good at that role. Do I wish he was maybe a little bit more skilled too? Sure, but he does his job pretty well. You know, we haven't seen enough to know, like, okay, you're not going to be in a box all the time, are you? There was a little bit of adjustment. We took some penalties that I didn't really love. But, you know, I thought he was net plus in the lineup all said and done. He, you know, with having guys like that on your team, sometimes, like, people don't appreciate that he's there for what doesn't happen. You know,
right.
He's there because Nico's not getting his face smashed into the ice things like that, that guys will be more likely to take liberties when
and he's since he's gotten in the lineup, you've seen those liberties go down a lot on what guys were doing. And, you know, it also with the element that it brings, you know, we go back to last summer. We were talking about how Toronto had gotten a lot tougher when they went out and they got Domi and Bertuzzi and Ryan Reeves.
Yep.
And I remember listening to an interview with Mike Rupp, and they were interviewing him, talking about the Maple Leafs and saying, you know, how much tougher is this, you know, are these guys going to be as a team? And Rupp was like, look, Ryan Reeves is one of the toughest guys in the league, but that doesn't make the team tough. He recalled a story about when he was playing, he wouldn't say who the team was that he was playing with. He wouldn't say who the player was, but somebody had come up to him on the bench and was like, Rupp, this guy's just bugging the shit out of me. You know, he won't let me, Bubba, can you just take care of him? And Rupp was like, no, that's not my job. Like, your job. So, and I don't watch enough Toronto Maple Leaf hockey to know if they kind of transcended into a tougher team because of those guys. But I can see that the Devils have with Curtis McDermott. And I'll go to the Ranger game. Not only do I not think that everybody drops the gloves if he's not in that lineup, but there's no way that Dawson Mercer goes after Cooley.
Right.
If he's not in that lineup. If he didn't bring that and kind of give the whole team that little bit of confidence.
That's right.
And stuff, that doesn't
It's not
happen.
Just him running around as like the bodyguard.
Right.
He's adding an element of toughness that permeates the whole team.
And I think that, you know, for a minimal salary for a guy that, he's not going to play all 82 games.
Bring him in the lineup when it's more likely he's going to be needed.
And even if you don't have him in one game, okay, let's just say you're playing Tampa Bay Lightning. And it's the first of three games you have to play with them. And let's say McDermott's scratched the first game and things get a little out of hand and they take a little too far. Game two that they play and McDermott's in that lineup, that ends. But my point is, too, even knowing that he's in the on the team,
yes,
maybe you don't take those liberties because you know eventually that bill's going to have to be paid, like Rempe did. You know, eventually
every team has a book on them, and let's face it, the book on the Devils is they're physically soft. So when you change that book, it you know, going into the pregame preparations, that you know that's no longer something they're saying. Where hey guys, we gotta hit this team, give them a little extra, they fall apart. You'll take that off the books there, and it won't be their store anymore. It's not mean you're going to automatically win every game. And you definitely don't want him in there taking bad penalties and slowing down the offense and putting you on the PK all the time. But, you know, I think that, you know, guys like him definitely still have their place in this league. Yes, yeah. It's not like it was years ago where you expected every night you're going to have your fighter fight a game. And, you know, no, but they still have a place on the team, sure.
Well, I mean, I think they should sign him. I do. Yeah, there are guys out there that can do that job, but you have him already. He's already here. The guys, they all seem to like him. He seems to fit in with this team. I say sign the guy. You know, there was a couple of guys, though. Like, I had a little bit of a list of a couple of UFAs that are after this season that maybe we – you know, I just want to kind of get your opinion. So after this season, the Devils are going to have, I think, between $21 and $22 million of salary cap space.
Wow.
It's around 12th in the league. So they're on the upper, you know, 50% of that in the salary cap, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about, you know, a true second line center to play. Right. And, you know, I was looking at some of these stats and looking at some of these numbers, and there are actually a couple of guys that listener Tim Wood had kind of – he sent us a DM of some players to keep an eye on. And these two guys were on it, and that's Sean Monahan and Chandler Stephenson.
Okay.
So Monahan is – you know, he's a center. He shoots lefty, 6'2", 196 pounds. This year he's got 24 goals, 32 assists, and he gets – who was that, Monahan? He – right – I mean – less than $2 million a year, 1.985 the guy's getting.
Wow.
So maybe a guy like Sean Monahan, if, you know, he doesn't re-sign, who'd they send him to? Who'd he go to? Vegas or
perhaps
some Western team from Montreal. I don't know, Vancouver. Right. I don't know.
And he's a rental, basically.
Yeah. So he's a UFA, and if they don't end up signing him, these are good numbers, and mm-hmm. this is a bigger dude. The other guy who I really like is Chandler Stephenson, who also comes in at 2.75 AAV right now.
Right.
So, again, these are very manageable contracts and guys that you can sign for, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal. And Chandler Stephenson, again, another left-handed shooting centerman, 6 foot, 210 pounds. This year he's got 16 goals, 31 assists, and 2 cups. So, you know, Chandler Stephenson's coming in with some pedigree. We don't have enough guys on this team that have Stanley Cup experience. I think that definitely helps. And I also think, and I know we're going to talk about this a lot more down the road, but you had said about, we were talking a little bit about coaching the last show.
Yeah.
And you said something I think is an absolute prerequisite. Do not hire a head coach that has not made a Stanley Cup run.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, exactly. I mean, what we talked
about. Run and preferably a cup win, but yeah, definitely.
I mean, Tom McClellan has won a cup, but it was as an assistant coach, but still he was there as an assistant. And I think that that's huge. And, you know, Lindy Ruff has never won a Stanley Cup. And he never will.
Right.
So yeah, those
you don't
two
want to take that kind of like baggage that the negative, you know, like, because this team has its own.
Right.
So you want somebody to help shake that baggage, you know?
That's it. Yeah. That's it. And, you know, so I think maybe one of those two guys or, you know, whoever else maybe is available that we find out a little bit later on that aren't on this list. But I really like Monahan or Stephenson for that second line center to play with Jack and whoever you throw in there. Now, let's say that you got a guy like Chandler Stephenson. You know, mm-hmm. you're talking about a top six that could potentially be, you know, Hughes, Stephenson, Mercer, Meyer, Heischer, Palat, I mean, Meyer, Heischer, and Bratt. That's a really solid top two lines if everybody can stay healthy. You know, then you got some guys on the defensive side. A couple of these guys are with Carolina right now, and that's Brett Pesce. You know, right-handed shooting defenseman, big dude, 6'3", 206 pounds. Yeah. And Brady Shea is a left-handed defenseman, 6'3", 210 pounds.
You know, plus 10. Had a lot of success with Carolina.
Yeah, and Pesce is over, a little over $4 million a year. Brady Shea is 5.25 AAV, so they're a little higher priced.
A guy named Pesce belongs in New Jersey.
This is very true. but, yeah, having a guy like him on the lineup, you know, I mean – do you think that they need one or two defensemen?
Okay, so Hamilton's coming back, right? We want to see Hughes in the lineup. We want to see Nemec in the lineup.
Yep. So there's four.
Exactly. Now, then we got some question marks surrounding others. Ball.
Well, Kevin Ball, I think, is going to be there.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be there.
I understand why they might give him another year of development. You know, this is his first real full year, maybe technically second because he was in fairly early last year. But I believe it's his first full year from the beginning of the season, right?
Did he? Yeah, last year he didn't really get into the lineup every day until probably after the trade deadline last year.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he was, you know, in and out of the lineup, him and Brendan Smith. And then kind of when they plugged
he's
him in.
He's got a huge upside. We know that. Ball, you know, his size is great. We've seen him do some really smart things. But, you know, we've seen him be really inconsistent too. But you're probably right. You think there's no chance he's not going to be in this lineup next year? Is that what you're saying?
I think he's going to be in the lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that
four, right?
Five. I think five, that you can right. pretty much pencil in Luke Hughes or, you know, Sharpie in, Luke Hughes, Dougie Hamilton, Shimon Nemec, Kevin Ball. Maybe that is only four. Yeah, that's only four. So okay. We need two more.
Okay. You know, of the people we have had, I mean, I kind of feel like maybe it's time to cut Siegenthaler loose. I don't know.
I
mean, I would like to see a replacement for him. And Brendan Smith. You know, like Brendan Smith, sometimes he gets a big heart award for me because I appreciate his efforts. I think like some of the things I used to complain about with other defensemen, one thing I can't complain about with him is he's always got his heart in the game. But man, between some of the penalties and just
stupid, you know, his quality of defense. Mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. I get it. I give him all the credit in the world for being a utility player and just being an all around great guy. But be honest with you, I would like to see his position filled too. So yeah. Maybe two, yeah. Maybe we're looking for two defensemen, if at all possible. Definitely.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Chris Tanev is still going to be a free agent after this year if right. Dallas doesn't sign him. I think he would be a really good player on this team. And for what he brings, just that, you know, solid, big, stay-at-home dude, I'd really like to see them go and get him. I mean, you still have Seamus Casey now too. Do you really want to bring in another rookie to play on the back end?
We still have a very young D.
After what we went through this year, I just don't know if that's something that Devils management and fans have an appetite for right now.
And goaltenders. I mean, I'm watching Allen and I'm looking at his body language of that last game and I could see it. Like, boy, this seems familiar, doesn't it? Like, we're just eating up these goalies. They just come out, and then just the constant mistakes, you could just see it getting to them. So, yeah, I mean, we need somebody with some experience if we're going to have guys with great potential. But let's face it, maybe they're not the rookie year anymore, but Nemec and Hughes are not going to overnight stop making some mistakes.
No.
So we need some responsibility and some experience.
So what about John Marino?
So, yeah, I mean – I want Marino from last year, and I don't know if that guy's coming back. This year's Marino, I'm not impressed. He has not been consistent. He's had a couple good games. He's had a lot of really rough games, and I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's just the system and the coaching. See, you know, if you're a big Marino fan, you say, listen, there's nothing wrong with him. He was used incorrectly. The defensive system's not working, this and that. And there is some truth to that argument. I'm sure that guy's in there somewhere from 2 years ago. And I think he was just amazing 2 years ago. He was – this last season, he was, I think, by our most solid guy, to be honest with you. I mean, Hamilton was always great for the goals and stuff, but as far as responsibility, making smart plays, being great on the penalty kill as well as the power, Marino was great. And, you know,
so
I don't know. That's why I go back and forth with him.
Would you think or do you think that it's enough if the Devils come in the 24-25 season with Luke Hughes, Shimon Nemec, Dougie Hamilton, John Marino, Kevin Ball, and player X, let's say it's now really, yes, Elias Lindholm would be the guy I say you go and get, but you're going to have to pay that guy a fortune, and Vancouver's going to pay him. So maybe, you know, a guy like Brady Shea, Joe Pesci, Brent Pesci, or, you know, a Tanev, or maybe even a Hanifin, if you really want to go and try and get, a stellar, really good blue chip kind of guy. Maybe you go after Noah Hanifin, because I do think they're going to have the money for it. So, but let's say it's Noah Hanifin. Let's just say, are you okay with that as your blue line?
I think so. I mean, there's enough in that, you know, there's enough experience mixed in with some of the younger guys. You know, we were talking about having the big stay-at-home guy, maybe two, or, you know, potentially, originally we were talking about pairing him up with every one of our scoring-type defensemen.
Does make sense.
Yeah, right, to balance out. And, you know, when these guys want to pinch in, you know the other guy's back. And
so let's say it's not Hanifin then. Let's say it is a guy like, Tanev, okay? Right. So you have Dougie Hamilton and Chris Tanev in pairing one, and you have Luke Hughes and John Marino in pairing two, and you have Kevin Ball and Shimon Nemec in pairing three.
Ball is also inexperienced. If I'm going to put Nemec with somebody, I kind of want somebody more experienced than Ball. And it's not that I don't want Ball, but it's weird. So, like, if we were to just throw out things, I'm going to say it's possible to do all this, but you get a guy like Hanifin and Ball, I mean, if Ball's going to end up being defensively responsible, more stay-at-home big guy, and Hanifin is, you know, the one who's going to go up there and score, in the future, that could be a good pairing. But I do worry about him with Nemec, you know, because he's like...
I get it. And I'll tell you, though, like, we talked about it. Kenny was talking, Danico was talking about it on the last broadcast about Kevin Ball. And
right,
Kevin Ball needs to become that stay-at-home defenseman.
Yes.
He needs to be developed in that way, that this is your job, okay? You are just, you know, forget about the offense. Take any delusions of grandeur that you have of being a, you know, scoring defenseman.
He needs to sit down and watch some Kenny Danico.
That's what he needs to do.
Yep.
Because, and I said it, you do that, you play in this league for as long as you want to play in this league. And I agree. I believe that. So, and Kevin Ball has every other attribute. He has all the physical attributes.
Yep.
Absolutely. So can a coach come in, develop him to just be that big, solid, stay-at-home defenseman who can use his body, use his long reach and long stick, and take care of, do his job that way? Because right now, I don't know what Kevin Ball is. And I
feel like this year that direction was never given to him, because – the proof I give for that, it's not like, how do you know? Maybe they were working with him. Why? Because he was never really scratched. You know,
he
didn't spend a lot of time on the bench.
Game.
So if he was not doing what they were telling him, you think there would have been some kind of repercussions. And I didn't see that. So I just feel like he was kind of mismanaged there by the coaching staff. So you're absolutely right. He could evolve into that guy, a Kenny Danico type guy with, by the way, longer reach and better shot. So it's pretty good. And I would like to work on, you know, outlet passes and just making people pay in our end. He's got the size. He needs to make sure he finishes every check. He doesn't always do that. When he does, it makes a huge difference with that size. And when he doesn't, you notice it. You're like, oh, what are we
doing? I mean, I don't know what is going on between his ears that he doesn't use the body that he has, but it's like, it's a coach needs to come in here, whoever is going to be that defensive coach, and just work on this guy just being that big physical stay-at-home dude. Yeah. And I think that that could change the blue line. So I'm okay. Like, I've been back and forth on so many players. Like, this Devil year, the whole season has just completely confused me. There's guys that I was big on and now I don't want on the team. Guys that I didn't want on the team that now I kind of do. And one of the guys that I was putting up a bit of a defense for recently, you know, a few weeks ago and stuff, but the last handful of games I'm watching is dog shit, is Alex Holtz. Like, this guy, I'm sorry, I don't know if he's ever going to get it. I just don't. Like, if you were to take him and say, put him on the top six line and basically tell him none of your, you know, don't worry about your defense. You're out here to score goals. I don't know any team that's going to tell a top six forward they don't have to play defense. But
they're not going far. That's not a playoff team.
Right. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but I watch him get beaten on the boards almost every single time. He's,
no place in NHL for that kind of stuff. He needed to work harder to make his case. You're right.
Yeah, and I'm just, you know, like, it's already, I think, a foregone conclusion that he's out the door. He's going to be packaged up for with whoever we probably send to Nashville for UC Soros.
I think it's for the best. I mean, I know that a lot of the shit that was, like, obviously wrong between him and Lindy, it was very easy to take his side on it because everybody's getting pretty, you know, wearing their patience. Lindy was wearing everybody's patience then for a whole bunch of reasons, and the way he, let's say, misused Holtz was part of that. But I think, like, there's also something to me that says, look, you're a young player and you can't get along with Lindy Ruff. The rest of the team can. What's your deal? I mean, Lindy was, like, fairly good with having young guys under his wing. And, like, even if he didn't get the greatest results, he didn't ever seem like, you know, like, this guy, I got to put him in the doghouse. I feel like there's maybe more of a reason than we really realize.
Yeah, something is not clicking with him. And you know, we all know, everybody's spoken about it, you know, all season long, how Lindy Ruff has misused guys. And then you kind of see when these guys are put in more favorable positions and more, Timo Meier now being up on the top six, playing the right side on the first power play, and great things happened. You know, you see it with a couple of different guys, but with Holtz,
getting more out of Mercer these days,
right? And then Holtz got the opportunity, and you didn't do it. Like, you had as soon as Green came in, you were on that top six, you were playing with Jack, and you did nothing.
You weren't, put him in the box guy anymore. Exactly. You got a fair shot, and I know it was like a super long term, but. You know, other guys managed to use that time to show, okay, there's hope here, you know, and, you know, but you're right.
And another
I'm totally okay with them cutting him loose.
And I think another team will have more patience with Alex Holtz too. Yes. If he ends up going to Nashville, this isn't a Nashville first round draft pick. This is a guy that they just got in. They're going to treat like everybody else. But I think having that hanging over his head his whole career is that you were a first round pick. Like, you were picked early in the first round. You're expected to do more than this. And he just hasn't. I don't think that, you know, I think Holtz, and I'm fine with that. But the thing is, too, I do think from the rumblings that I'm getting that I would not be shocked if Barry Trotz and Tom Fitzgerald pretty much have the framework of a deal for UC Soros laid out.
Mm.
And it's just a matter of, you know, getting done with the season here for Nashville.
Wow.
Now,
interesting.
I believe that there very well could be framework for that. Now, maybe I'm completely wrong. It is Reckless Speculation Thursday, but
what are these rumblings? You're just seeing little things here and there, or
I mean, I got a dude that is in Nashville and kind of told me that, you know, with the Predator organization, that it does, you know, Barry Trotz has said many times that UC Soros is most likely going to be traded at the end of this season. So.
Wow.
So again, if it's to the Devils, who else are we giving up? Like, Barry Trotz isn't going to let this guy walk out for nothing. And he's not going to let this guy do a one-for-one swap for Alex Holtz.
I was going to say, like, I'd be perfectly happy with that, but that's not going to happen. So Yeah, that's a great question. You don't think it's going to be money and picks, and we could just get out of just losing?
No.
Just maybe a Holtz.
No, there's got to be more to this.
You think you're going to want somebody even better than Holtz that we're going to have to pay the price for, like a Mercer or somebody?
I do. I think it is going to end up being a Mercer, or I don't know. Maybe you package a few guys up and send them out, but like. If it's a Mercer and a Holtz, I mean, I'm okay with that. Look, it is what it is. I think Mercer's going to be an extremely good hockey player in this league, and I think Mercer's going to have a great career. I would like to see him do it here because I do think this was just a down year.
Yeah, I still believe he's got a good career ahead of him. It's too bad we couldn't, like, to be honest with you, I'd feel better about, you know, Holla, but I don't know how much he's looking at needing a Holla, you know?
I mean, and we have Holla. Like, I don't know if you're going to be able to dump a guy like Holla or a guy like Palat. Like, the more I look at it, I think those guys are there, and I think we're stuck with them. And maybe if Holla was just a third line center and played with, let's say, you know, Curtis Lazar and Andre Palat, I'd be fine with that. But then you also have to look at, like, we do have other dudes like Nolan Foote and, you know, Nate Bastian coming back, and the kid Shane Bowers. I like everything I've seen from Shane Bowers. I like everything I see. Every time I've seen Nolan Foote play with the big club, I like him. And I think he's going to be – I think he could be a really valuable piece on this team.
There will come a point where, you know, like we're going to like have that spot blocked up because we got – Holla and to some extent Palat and these longer contracts for aged guys. We kind of knew this going in. That could happen. Hopefully it's not next year, but I can see it's possible.
Like, I'd be fine if you shipped off Holla. I would be totally fine with that. And you move a guy like, you know, even if you put Curtis Lazar centering a third line with Palat and, you know, Nolan Foote and a fourth line of, I don't know if Nosek is coming back, but let's just say that we do sign him for another year. He's centering line four with Nate Bastian, and I don't know who else you'd throw on that. Maybe. I mean, Shane Bowers seems to be a little bit too good to be putting up on the fourth line. Curtis McDermott, you know. But like, I see, like, these big contracts for older guys like Palat and Holla, like you just said, blocking up spots where I feel like we need to get better. But I don't know if we're going to be able to because of those guys.
Yeah. And, you know, to some extent, you kind of want to have the problem before you plan for it, because you don't want to end up in the position that our defense was, which is, oh, we like these guys, can't wait to get them in the lineup. And then you find out, you know, like, hey, they're not ready, you know? So if you can work one in at a time and just, you know, somehow manage that, that might be better than just cutting them loose. And, you know, I'm kind of disappointed to some extent with both of them, but just because we needed that leader to come in this year when people were out, and you know, they have the experience, they both have, you know, cup and playoff history, that, you know, you wanted them to bring that to the team, didn't really materialize. So, like, to some extent, like, based on that, I'm not sorry to move on from those guys maybe sooner than I had hoped. But you know, I don't think you also want to just jump the gun and go, okay, we got these rookies, we're ready to throw them in, you know, and have a questionable third and fourth line, you know, that would be a trouble.
Yeah, you're right. So, you know, maybe then you hold on to them for another year, and, you know, maybe you bring, because maybe if Holla is strictly that bottom six, third line guy, and he, like, to me, I'm a big proponent on keeping lines that work together. I know that that's not the norm anymore in hockey. You know, everything gets, you know, thrown in a blender, and it's just a matter, you know, every coach wants to have players that can play with everybody. And I agree with that, but
that's all the analytics too. They're looking at the analytics and they're trying to set up lines with math, you know, and it's kind of weird, but
it is,
that's what's happening.
You know, I feel like, you know, a true second line center is absolutely needed on this team. A guy or two for that bottom six, absolutely needed on this team. Not even saying that you have to go out and trade for them. They could be in the system. It could be, you know, Foote and Bowers. It could be Foote and insert other player. It would definitely need at least one good defenseman, maybe more, depending on what they decide to do. And you got to get the goalie.
And all these moves, like, they might, you know, complicate things. So you make your priorities. And let's say the priority, for the sake of argument, is the goaltender, which a lot of people would agree with. You know, like, what do you got to give up? And then, you know, you're looking at getting some guys that you know that you're going to, you know, have to give up. So now you have another spot to fill. Like, we're talking about, hey, losing Mercer. If we're lucky, maybe Halla. Both those are two spots that, you know, I really would rather not lose Mercer. But, you know, it may force us into needing more people than we, you know, are talking about as the team stands right now.
Right. I mean, can you entice a team like Nashville, who, let's say they want Dawson Mercer and Alex Foltz, can you entice them with, okay, not Mercer, but we'll give you Graham Clark and Holtz and, I don't know, somebody else, say, you know, somebody from Utica, developmental guy, you know, Jonas Siegenthaler, and, you know, maybe we can package a little bit more if it's needed for them. I mean, I don't know how many teams are really going to want Jonas Siegenthaler. I do think he's going to end up just kind of being a piece, an extra piece. But we have to move on from him. We absolutely have to move on from him. And I'm up in the air about whether or not we have to move on from John Marino. I do feel...
I know. Look, if it's for the right deal, I'm going to be like, damn, I wish it had worked out, but I'm going to understand it. You know? And if he manages to stay and comes back, I'd be so happy we kept him. Because
absolutely.
I'm telling you, I can't remember too many players where it was such a night and day difference between one season. Nah. He was such a plus for us last season, and just has not met anywhere near that level this year. So, you know, I kind of, you know, heart of hearts, I want him to stay. I like the way he plays. He's a cerebral kind of player when he's on his game. He's a thinker. He kind of reminds me of Niedermeyer, and he had some of those qualities. Not quite the speed, but a thinker, and he made some amazing plays and passes, and it was just such so solid. This year, none of those things are consistently true.
No.
So
I don't know what's going on with him this year, but yeah,
if definitely. I didn't know better, he had like concussion-like trauma somewhere or something. I don't remember an incident. I don't know.
Like, it is just so crazy how every single player on this team just went, you know, and I don't so I'm working on an article now for the website. I'm hoping that I'm probably not going to get it on until after the weekend because I got to tighten it up. And I was kind of waiting until after the season.
That's UnclePuckers.com, right?
TheUnclePuckers.com.
TheUnclePuckers.com.
Yes. Yeah. So I was originally going to do my idea was early on in the season that I was going to do at the end of the 82 game season, do a pie chart of praise where I was going to divvy up who were the best, you know, what it was so great. We're making it to the playoffs and, you know, this was our season. Why was our season so good? Because I was expecting a very good season.
Called punch and pie. You can have the negative and then the positive.
Well,
punch in the pie.
And then I figured, you know, we're probably not going to win the cup. So let's say whatever series we lose in after that, I do a pie chart of blame.
There you
go. Now I'm doing just a pie chart of blame for the season. Which is not something I originally planned on doing.
Nobody planned on that. But and, here we are.
Yeah. And I'm hoping to put that up probably on Monday.
This pie chart is going to look like this person gets 30% of the blame. This one gets 22%
exactly.
of the blame. Like,
and then I'll explain why I feel like those guys are getting that percentage. Like percentage, like the like injuries, of course, the immaturity / youth, the goaltending, the coaching, the management, off-ice problems, all those things are all going to get certain percentages.
Nobody's safe. The mascot. Anybody could be.
The mascot was the only thing this year I kind of liked.
I don't know. Did he do anything different? He's okay.
No. I do have to say, it took two seasons, but Bill Spalding is really growing on me.
I will always be grateful that he is not Steve Gangulo. So he's always got that, you know, just not being cangy. That's great. And he's a little goofy at times. But
oh, he's so
you're
goofy.
Right. To some extent, he's been growing on me a little bit, too. I think he's kind of like finding his way, especially dealing with Ken. Look, dealing with Ken is not the easiest thing in the world.
Oh, no.
I mean, I love him, but he's just like, he'll just like, noises come out sometimes. He'll be in the middle of a sentence, and I know Spalding's like, should I hop in and finish this sentence or move on?
Today, Junior?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I'm sure Kenny's probably like just this big guy breathing all over him, you know? He's not the same kind of guy as Kenny. He's like,
and you know that.
I say it's like nerdy, you know?
Kenny Danico wears his emotions on his sleeve. So whether team's doing terrible, I'm sure he's absolutely miserable to be next to, you know, especially when there's stoppages of play and they're on the commercial
I can only
break.
Imagine that he probably, on a regular basis, flips out.
Oh, yeah. As soon as they go to commercial, can you fucking believe this? Yes. And throwing shit. And then when they're doing good, he's like the biggest cheerleader in the world. So it's
jumping
a roller coaster
up and down, knocking
emotions.
Shit off the desk.
Yeah,
you know?
I could totally see that, like, you know, probably putting Balding in a in a headlock, Balding in a headlock and shit, and, you know, just being a fucking frat boy. But I could totally see that. And you know what I like about Spalding too, like, he doesn't seem to have a filter, and I've kind of noticed this, like, with certain things. Like, he was talking about Samsonov for Toronto, and look, Samsonov had a bad year in the beginning of the year, and he was sent down to the Toronto Marlies to work on his game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And normally a play-by-play guy would be like, Samsonov had a lot of struggles, you know, in the beginning of the year. He wasn't playing great. And then Spalding's like, he was absolutely awful.
Yeah.
Spalding was just like, he was terrible.
Now, Danico is not known for tact, but he's been a player so long. You know, you don't shit talk other players out loud in the media. And this guy, like, this dirty guy.
Care.
Yeah, I'm sure Danico on some level was thinking, man, if I heard you saying this shit about me, I would have met you in the hallway back then, you know? But you could tell, because Dano just goes silent.
Yeah.
He'll say something really shit about, and he'll just leave him there. And he won't say anything. He won't change the subject. He'll just say nothing until Spalding says something else.
Yeah, and it's so funny because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't do it to Devils, but he does do it to other teams. You know, oh God, did you see that play? That was terrible. What the hell was he thinking? Like, he just has no filter on stuff. He doesn't sugarcoat it. I was like,
imagine sometimes Danico just looks at him and goes, no, just shakes his head like, just doesn't say anything.
Like, even last year, like, when he first started, he was like the biggest jinx, like the shit that you're not supposed to say.
Hey,
he said it all the time.
Guys, there's only 3 minutes left and the Devils have a shutout. Shut the fuck up.
He doesn't
like,
get
are
it.
You kidding me? Anybody who's the least superstitious is like, dude, please don't do this to us. Please.
That's just common, like, etiquette in hockey. You don't mention the shutout. Not anything. 10 minutes left in the third, you don't talk about it.
Right.
But,
exactly.
I like him. You know, I think he's better than Matt Loughlin. I have a hard time listening to him. The only time I
put
the
Matt
radio.
So much better on the radio than when he was on TV. But I know what you're saying. Matt is not high energy.
No,
he's got
he's
a very
not.
Level kind of way of announcing the game. And to me, it kind of suits like a radio voice a little bit. It's almost like a baseball kind of call the way he is, you know?
Right.
Like, baseball guys are a real level, you know?
But
except
like
for maybe Sterling.
Yeah, he's just a tool. But like when a play-by-play guy for whoever your home team is, there, you know, that goal is the one that you have all the energy behind.
Right.
And then when the opposition scores, you're like, and yeah, they score, however you call it. But you're no way. Matt Loughlin has that same call on whoever scores, and it's not exciting. It's just, and he scored. That's the 20th goal for Jack Hughes this year. Dude, that was one of ours. I'm like listening to the radio, and I'm like, oh, we're down now. No, wait, that was our goal. I had no idea. The only reason I can think that it's us is because Chico's happy in the back.
My favorite radio guy was definitely Mike Miller. He was the best.
Yes, Miller was very good.
A little older to remember him because he's been gone a while, but he was the best.
And a programming note to our listeners, Stanley Cup champion and New Jersey native Jim Dowd is going to be joining the show, I believe, sometime next week. We're going to get that scheduled. So he's going to come on, and I cannot wait to pick his brain about.
I know we loved having him on the first time, but I'm going to tell you, I'm even more excited about him coming on now.
Like, I
need to know what he thinks of this season, this
and
team.
Not only do I want to know what he thinks, like, I want to know, like, you've been on teams that underperformed, right? You've been on teams, like, what is it like in that dressing room? Both ways, like, whether you just don't do it, and he's been on teams that, you know, were down and came back and made playoffs and ended up going on runs and stuff. Like,
and I'm going to have my bullshit detector out because I want to ask him, dude, how much are you also going right now? I cannot wait for the season to be over.
Right.
That's... And I'm getting, you know what? Some of these guys are going on this fucking playoff run. I don't even fucking care. I'm going to go enjoy my life with, you know, as an NHL player.
That's exactly what I want to know. Like, what is going on in that locker room? What's being said to these guys? You know, does it get to a point where the coach just throws his hands up and he's just like, yeah, go out there and do whatever the fuck you want? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot wait to talk to him about this. And
now remind me, he never had a chance to play with Green, did he? I got to look this up.
I don't think he ever played with Travis Green.
Okay.
I'm sure they were the same era, so I'm sure they played tons against each other. Right. Between Green being on the Islanders and the Maple Leafs and Dowd with, you know, New Jersey and then the other 25 teams he played for.
Right.
So, yeah, but, you know, I definitely, like, cannot wait to hear what he has to say about that because you're right. Like, it is... You know, does it get to a point where the guys are just like, hey, I don't even want to put my skates on today. Like, I don't even want, I just want this over. Like, as a fan, I just want this over. Like, I mean, I'm going to watch every game, but it's like, what does it really matter?
I get it. It's like, and it's disheartening because, you know, we've had high and low points throughout the season, but this is a little different. It kind of moves into, it's so hard to fight the apathy. You put the game on, and I'm like
the finality of it. You know, it's
it's just it doesn't matter. This game.
Yeah,
it
even when matter. Even when you had a 0.2% chance, there was still a 0.2% chance.
Yeah.
Now you've got that red X going through your name. You're not going to the playoffs. It does. Right. The only way you're going to the playoffs is if four other teams somehow cannot play, and you know you're asked to come in.
We need some planes to go down or buses to crash. Something horrible.
I didn't want to go there, but yeah, that's what you need. You do.
And you might need a bunch of them because I don't even know if they are sitting in
the that's what I was saying, at least four because, you know, you're going to need to get them in and maybe that fourth team would be us. But it's not good. But I love hockey and I love Stanley Cup playoffs and I watch a ton of it. I do not have any interest in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year.
I'm going to try to get in, but it's going to be an uphill battle. It's going to be, you know, it's a little bitter.
It's going to be rough. Because exactly. Like 2 years ago, I watched, you know, of course, I watched every game. Devils weren't in the playoffs, but you didn't have any expectations going into that season. That's what made last year such a great, awesome surprise because we didn't have high expectations and look what we got. Going in this year, like, especially if the Rangers have a good run or so, like, I do not, like, it makes me so fucking angry. I don't want to see it. And I also want to get to the summer. I want to get to free agency. I want to get to the draft. I want to see what the Devils are going to do.
Look at it this way. You can have some fun hating because we have plenty of enemies. You know, Rangers are probably top of the heap there as far as who's in the playoffs and maybe in general. Just bad things could befall these teams, and I'm going
to
enjoy that.
This is true. That's something to look forward to, possibly.
You know, will Toronto shit the bed yet again?
I hope so.
It's always fun to watch, you know?
And I hope the Rangers do. I hope the Rangers draw Tampa Bay in the first round, and Tampa Bay smokes them, and they lose in the first round again.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the one thing, like, Devil fans could at least hang their head at, okay, you played five more games than us, go fuck yourself. You know, what difference does it make?
Enjoy some playoff hockey, and let's face it, sometimes you got to embrace a little hate here, you know?
Oh,
it's probably better to be positive. But when you're a fan, it's kind of tough, you know. And so
now,
one way or the other, I'm going to try to enjoy these games as much
as I can. You know what I'm really looking forward to watching the Western Conference teams. I enjoy watching Edmonton, Colorado, Vancouver, you know, and stuff like that. But I have to say, like, as terrible as this season was and how there was not a ton of joy in this season, I am so looking forward to next season.
I know.
Like,
part, too. I mean, it would have happened if we were in the playoffs and the moment that you're out of the playoffs. And honestly, even if you win the cup, there's all that great joy and everything, but you can't wait to get the next season. Well, we started early with that.
So. Yeah, I know.
I feel like I cannot wait for October, you know?
Yeah, because I do think that this team, if the right moves are made, they're going to be right back in it.
Yes.
You know, I think... Look at like what this team would be like this year if UC Soros and Jake Allen were your starting tandem from day one. I mean, they're in the playoffs. It's unfortunate, you know, Jack Hughes worries me so much about his health. And like said a couple of months ago, like, dude, if you need surgery on that thing, go get it now. If by some reason,
maybe it should have been done a month ago. I don't know.
You know, at least he's going to be back for training camp, so that's good. I just hope that this fixes that problem because, you know, you could see it this year.
But I'll tell you what, if he needed it all along and he's not ready to go because he needs more than the summer to recover, it makes you think that that was mismanaged as well, and they should have got it done, especially if the management wasn't making the moves we needed anyway. It's like,
well, you apparently didn't have the belief. Yeah, you didn't have belief in the team. Why didn't you just shelve Jack in February?
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just so much that they have to do. I can't wait to, you know, finally after the cup is won and free agency hits, I cannot wait to see what this team goes out and does, because they do have the money. You should have a team still that people want to come play on. You know, every NHL player has been in up and down seasons, and I don't know many guys that would look at the Devils and say, I can help this team and this team can win a cup. And that's, you know, that's got to be the goal next year. It's got to be, I mean, I'm not saying, of course, not cup or bust, but it can't even still be like, I just hope we make the playoffs. No, like, this should be the anomaly. Last season should be the mindset going in. Like, no, that last season, this season, last season wasn't the Devils. Now, the 2 seasons ago, that was us. Now, let's be that again and go out there and do it. And, you know, it's going to be so much fun to watch. Yep. But,
and the person most in the hot seat is going to be Tom Fitzgerald. This offseason, so much bigger than last offseason. You know these problems are exposed, and you have to make deals. And you know, you're working with what you said was with the 12th best cap space. But still, you got some needs, and you got to make it work. I would hope he's got a super busy offseason. I would tell you this. I don't think there's a Devil fan out there who's going to be happy with minimal moves this offseason. You know,
I agree. I
mean, it's got to be – you got to fill those roles we've been talking about. And if you're not damn close to most fans' like obvious wish list on this, then what are you doing? You
know? And it's not a quantity of players. We're not saying go get 6 new guys on this team next year. Nope. It's the quality of player. That's what it comes down to. Don't shortchange yourself. Like, I think everybody thought that, you know, Jake Allen was just that throwaway to keep the fans happy, that you actually did something, and, you know, you just couldn't put the 3 dudes that we were putting on the ice anymore. You just couldn't do it, especially at home. Like, you cannot put those guys out there. They're going to get booed. They're going to, the fans are fucking turning on them. And that's why he fired Lindy Ruff before the home game after that West Coast trip. I don't think he wanted to do it. I honestly don't. I think he was still holding out hope, but
the fans, you could feel it in the building and everything.
Yeah, like, dude, they're going to fucking kill you if you don't make a move here. And, you know, so it's about the quality of player. Like, there are a handful of goalies out there that are what we're looking for. We all know who they are, right? The big four is Soros, it's Markstrom,
it's Omark,
and it's Brassois. Those are, like, the 4 guys that you want to try and go after. And if you can get one of them with Jake Allen now next year, you know what? As long as they stay healthy, your goaltending is set. It's set. There will be 0 question marks going into this season with the goalie. And you're talking about the Jim Dowd thing. What's the one thing Jim Dowd said when he was on this show last time? He said, hey, Jim, with the great season we had, how do you feel about going? He goes, I worry about that goaltending. It was before a fucking puck was dropped. And, you know, this is an ex-NHL guy. That was everybody's concern.
Sold on Vanacek, and, you know, Schmidt, he saw the playoffs he had, but, you know, untested.
You know, you say the playoffs he had, Dan. It was the Rangers series.
He came back down to earth and real fast against Carolina. Yes.
We played 5 games against Carolina. Our same goalie started and finished only one of them. So 4 games between Vanacek and Schmidt, whoever started got pulled and the other one was in. Not a recipe for success.
And I will say, unlike this season, the defense was not the problem against Carolina.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, everybody could have played a little bit better, and, you know, it's a team sport, yada, yada, yada. But this season, I'll be honest, I understand why, you know, for the first few months, you know, you're watching going, okay, well, how much can I judge Vanacek by the defense that we're putting up here, the team defense? That wasn't the case last year in the playoffs.
No, and you know, you can't. He shouldn't have gauged this team going forward, and the two goaltenders in particular, over the 82-game season that happened. Because we all know, look, the game 83 on is a different sport. It's a different game. You made it through a very emotional series that, for all intents and purposes, you probably should have lost. And you played with a lot of heart.
Seven games, yeah.
It took seven. And you played great, and you get through that series. But then everything that you didn't want to happen happened in that second series, and all your weaknesses were exposed. In the playoffs, I'm sorry, your weaknesses are going to be exposed a hell of a lot more than they are throughout the course of an 82-game season where you're playing a different opponent every single night. This is now absolutely the same team. You have to beat them four times. Trust me, your weaknesses are going to be exposed. How you walk out of that series against Carolina and say our goaltending is good going into the 23-24 season is beyond me. Because, you know, Dan, me and you said it the day we were knocked out of the playoffs. They've got to get a goalie. And, we knew going in, these are some huge hole we had. Let's hope. And that was everyone's fucking whole mindset. Let's just hope it holds up, right? Devils can outscore their problems. Let's just hope it holds up. But you know what, dude? If you're losing guys to injury, 37, 38, or 39 games lost to injury this year for the Devils, that's a lot of games. And the guys that were out, you're talking about your fourth line center. You're talking about, you know, Nosek, who was out most of the season. You lost Dougie Hamilton for the entire season. I think he only played 20-something games. You lost Jack Hughes for a huge chunk of time. Timo Meier for a big chunk of time. Nico Hischier for a big chunk of time. You know, Lazar in and out of the lineup. Like, you know, we lost a ton of guys to injury this year, and you can't outscore your problems when we're not healthy. So the defense, everything was magnified tenfold this year because we couldn't help ourselves.
Spotlight shown.
Yeah. Right there. So if you go,
we were in a position where we're going to have to win a lot of games fairly low scoring.
Yeah.
Which is not like last year.
It's not our style.
It's like, hey, come back third period. We're down two goals. Who cares? We're going to score four in a third. That was us last year. That would at least, you know, we played some tight games, but, you know, if we needed goals, we'd manufacture. With those guys out, you needed to play a good, hardworking, tight game.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of pitching contribution from everybody and make a team defense work. And it was far from that.
Yeah. And you're going to have to somehow moving forward, if you really want to be a contender, you're going to have to marry those two aspects. You're going to have to be able to score when needed. You're going to have to be able to dig down on a tie game late in the third and get that game winning goal. But then if you're up by two or three, you're going to have to lock it down, and they have to learn how to do that, you know, much better than they did this year, because there was no lead safe to the New Jersey Devils.
And it just, you know, I think it says a lot about where they're at mentally, how like out of control things are when you have those breakdowns where goals are scored in quick bunches. And I was kind of bummed with the last game.
Yeah.
Because I think it was goals 3 and 4 they gave up. We were like 15 seconds apart. Like, what do we do? This is so familiar, guys. You know, what are we – these collapses. And it usually involves one that, like, on the surface might look like, oh, what was that goal? It was like – I'm not saying it was bad goals. Unexpected. There was that weird knuckleball puck that was almost from the blue line that beat Allen. And when you look at the goal, it wasn't like – you know, I don't think it was a bad goal. But then, you know, it's followed up right away with another goal.
And when you examine every one of those goals, you see a player out of position. Yes. You see where if they were coached properly, if they knew had a strong system in place.
Yeah, how to plan, executed it.
I get it. Everybody makes fucking mistakes once in a while. Sure. But this was all season long, almost every game. There was a stretch there where it was just – they were every game giving up 2 to 3 goals in a matter of 2 or 3 minutes. And that's unacceptable. Like, you cannot do it. The coaching, again, that's going to be, to me, the number one thing. Like, but as far as the big offseason goes, if it's not one of those four guys, like, do Devil fans revolt here? Like, if you go and get just some guy, you know? And say that's our goaltending issue. You know, we're fixed. Like, I don't know, man.
I think everybody's going to flip out a little bit.
Like you went and said you used the term big game hunting, and even even to some Devil fans, I think Lorraine Brossoit they would look at and say this is not big game hunting. This is this is a cop out.
Clearly number four on that list. But I don't think necessarily it's the worst choice to make, but I mean as far as like desirability ranking among most people, he'd probably take the number
four. Oh yeah, I think so.
And there probably would be some people not satisfied without anything less than, you know, an Allmark or a Markstrom. But, yeah, I mean, look, if you got these four guys that I would say are at the top of the heap, they got to go somewhere with the cap space we got, with the team we got. I don't see why we can't land one of those guys.
So I think, yeah,
it's kind of a must for Fitzgerald.
I think you have to. It has to be one of those four guys. Yeah. And even like you said, like as much as I do think Brossoit is a fantastic goalie, and I would be, me personally, totally fine if he was that 1A. I would not have a problem with that. I think he can do the job. To me, he's the fourth one. Like you, it has to be a guy. There are only a handful of goalies that every year are in that conversation, you know. And Juuse Saros is one of them. You know, he is a fantastic goalie. He's the youngest one out of the four. I think he's not even 30 yet. You know, you are going to have to pay the guy. I think he's got a nice chunk of change. I think he makes, I don't even know what.
Nine or something?
I don't think it's that much. I think it's in the sevens. It's the high sixes or sevens. You know, but that's a goalie. That's a lot of money for a goalie. I just want to check real quick.
At this point, you're going to have to do it. I mean, Devils fans who remember, you know, the Marty Brodeur days, really feeling right now how good we had it to have an in-house guy grow up through your team in one season, basically take the job and give you a whole
for 20 years
of play. I mean, it just doesn't happen that often. It's almost impossible. Think of the other greats up with him. You know, it was very amazing that we had him as long as we did.
I know.
And most teams, if they had other, you know, he did not stay with Montreal, you know, it's et cetera, so on. The greats, you know, you're lucky to have him to arrive with your organization. You didn't have to go trade for him like we're looking to do now, and to stay with you for over a decade. That's amazing, you know.
And I will fucking put the gloves on and fight anybody that says that Marty Brodeur is not the best goalie to ever play the game.
Oh, yeah.
It's just... You know, and we got to see him in his prime, you know, and not just like on TV. Like we were at so many of the games, and you never like walked in. There was I've been to hundreds and hundreds of games. And in the Marty Brodeur era, I can honestly say maybe three or four games that I showed up that he wasn't in net.
Right.
You know, he played every night.
So many games. It was so amazing to have him as like the core of the team, which, you know, those are great teams. So there's a lot of people you could. You know, Scott Stevens, et cetera. But in the end, it was built around Marty.
Yeah.
And he, you know, it's the kind of thing you're just not likely to get anymore. Who has the next Marty Brodeur? I mean, where is he in the league? He's not there.
Well, I mean, I think you could say Vasilevskiy.
Vasilevskiy's the closest.
Yeah.
Tampa's been blessed similarly to have him. I guess he's the Marty of this era, as close as you're going to get. Yeah. And that's about it.
You know, Juuse Saros. He signed a $6 million contract back in, I don't know when it was, but it doesn't matter. Right now, he's got a $5 million cap hit this year and next year, and he's a UFA after next year. So the total value is the last contract he signed, where the hell is it? I can't find it right now. But, it was $5 million cap hit. Now it was a total. He signed a 1-4 year deal at five. So it was a $20 million contract. So he's going to be a free agent after next year. Like this, you're going to trade whatever it is that you're going to trade, which is probably going to overpay in terms of prospects and everything else for a guy that you only have for the 1 year. Does that worry you?
Yeah. No, I get it. It's not ideal, but I mean, you have to make a move.
You'd like to at least, if you're going to give this up, at least have that verbal agreement that, you know, as soon as you get here, we're going to work on an extension, right? Like that has to at least be in the works here. You're not going to give everything up to have this guy for 1 year.
I mean, as much pressure as we're putting, the fans are putting on Fitzgerald to get something done, it can't be something stupid like
right.
that. It can't be.
Where Markstrom has 2 years left on his deal.
That definitely looks better. And you got time there to do good things with him to where, you know, he's going to want to come back, et cetera.
Right.
You can't give away the farm for that, you know, rental position. I get it. You definitely can't. And to some extent, that's kind of why, I mean, I would guess if you asked him, that's where Fitzgerald said, no, I'm not going to give away the farm to go get somebody. You know, and that's what his rationale was last summer.
Yeah.
And to some extent, that's what his rationale was maybe on the Markstrom deal that didn't happen. Right. Like,
yeah,
he
but
just said, I mean, everybody's got the impression he just fucked around with it too much.
Well, I kind of want to answer that real quick. I'm just going to do a quick shout out to DraftKings. You guys know what to do, right? You go to DraftKings, download the Sportsbook app, use code THPN, bet $5, and you'll get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, it's 1-877-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bets expire 168 hours after issuance. It's CDKNG, but doesn't that sound like I'm just saying other letters?
Yeah, I always feel like you're making them up, the letter. A, B, C, like, D, E, F, G.
But CDKNG.com. It's not CDKNG. It's C-S-E-E, like go to DKNG. And just
I thought
that,
it was
like,
letter C.
Right. As I'm reading that, I'm like, it's C. Like, that's going to confuse people. And it did. It is not. It's C, like, go to, check out, DKNG.com.
Check that out.
How
so
many people are going,
it.
See, just, how many people are just about to bet away their fucking college tuition? And they're yes. like, CDKNG.com/hockey. And nothing's happening. And they can't, right. And then they lose everything because this is written very poorly.
We should say view.
View D. I'm going to say view. I'm going to do the customer service. So here we go. Void Ontario.
Go to.
Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Go to dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resource. How'd I do?
You fixed their copy.
Good
job.
NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. That's DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. So
this doesn't work out. We're going to write copy for DraftKings.
Yeah, I got to email somebody up DraftKings. I got to email Mr. DraftKings and ask him about
King of all
that.
Drafts.
Yes. So yeah, I mean that's the thing. You know, don't be stupid, right? I think that's like. Be smart and don't be stupid and don't get cute. Like, you know, the Markstrom thing was, I think he just got cute and, you know, was just had that big chest out, you know, I'm going to fleece another team because that's what I'm known for. And Calgary got sick of it and said, no, dude, you know what? You know, you can have fun with Vitek Vanacek for the rest of the year, buddy. We're going to hold on to Markstrom. You know, so, you know, don't get stupid because UC Soros isn't – look, out of the four guys, UC Soros is my number one. He,
okay.
I think – yes, he is my number one. That is who I would pick.
I like his youth. I like his play. Definitely. Boy, and, you know, let's look at this too. Who do we got with the most playoff experience of the four? Because that's worth discussing.
That's a good question. Okay, so
who had the furthest playoff runs?
When
so we got all
well, when all Nashville runs. Made their run, when they made it to the finals, that wasn't UC Soros, right?
No.
That was Pecorini.
Yeah, my
right. Pecorini. So yeah. So I don't know how many games he's had. Let me look at UC Soros.
I do love his play, and I'm not. You know, I get it. You know, you're not going to necessarily land Vasilevskiy. With all the playoff experience in the world.
Okay, so UC Soros has played 17 games in the playoffs. He has a 3-7-0 record, a goals against average of 2.63, and a save percentage of 0.914. This is a very good little exercise here, Dan.
Yeah.
So that's UC Soros in the playoffs. You want to do Jacob Markstrom next?
Oh, we have to.
if I can learn how to spell.
That's all right. You're doing better than me. I'm not even trying to find it. I'm basically treating you like Siri right now. Siri, tell me all of Markstrom's stats involved.
Jacob Markstrom has a 13-13-0 record in 26 games with a goals against average of 2.90 and a save percentage of .911 in the playoffs in his career. Ding, ding.
Okay.
All right, so that's Jacob Markstrom. Better postseason numbers. Right. 26 games to the 17 played by UC Soros. How about we do Linus Ullmark? Linus Ullmark, career postseason stats. He has a 3-5-0 record in 8 games with a goals against average of 3.54 and a save percentage of .888.
Which is the worst of the three. Yes. By the numbers. I'm not saying he's the worst goalie necessarily, but worst playoff record so far. Absolutely. And then, of course, we mentioned Bressois, which, you know.
Lorraine Bressois has a 5-2-0 record in the playoffs in 9 games.
I think that makes him the only one with a winning record.
That's true. A goals against average of 3.26. They're all around the threes, high and mid threes.
One of the higher ones, actually. And he had one that was like a 2-something, didn't you?
Well, Jacob Markstrom had the best numbers in the postseason out of these guys. But he's played more games.
What was his goals against?
I think Markstrom's goals against was the one you were saying was in the twos, and I think he's the only guy, if I remember, that has a save percentage above
9-11.
So Jacob Markstrom, he's got the best postseason stats. I think you can say Linus Ullmark and Lorraine Bressois with 8 and 9 playoff games, respectively. They just do not have any experience in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And UC Soros is like middle of the road at 17 games. Not many, but... and not a great record. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think you make your whole decision based on their playoff numbers. I'm not saying that. But, you know, it's good to know them. And Markstrom's got that locked up as a factor with experience. And he's not that old. He's not, you know, I know he's older than Soros, but, you know.
And he has 2 years on his contract.
Yes. Makes him very desirable. I get it.
Even if Markstrom only plays out his contract and then explores free agency, retires, whatever, he's probably not going to retire, but explores free agency, whatever, I would be okay with, Mercer, Holtz, a deal like that for Markstrom.
You have him for 2 years.
Because you got him for the 2 years. Yes.
And that's going to be huge. And in that time, you got time to, if you can't get him, you know, hopefully you've got even more reasons that for people to come play for this team.
I think Jacob Markstrom might have to be the guy that your white whale in this. I think he might have to be. It's just, you know, everything that you want from a goalie, he has.
He never got the white whale, so I hope he's not the white whale.
Yeah, that's true. UC Soros is the smallest of the bunch, too.
Right.
And that matters.
He's unusually small for NHL stats. Part of me is like rebelling against the stats because... You know, as a 5'10 goal tender, I can only relate to these 6'5", 6'7 goalies so much.
Right.
When they're about as tall as I am on my skates when they're down in the butterfly.
I know.
It's like at some point we're getting to like – it's almost like watching basketball. These guys are so huge.
Yeah, I know.
But, yeah.
It's so hard to run dribble a puck, though.
Get it. It is. It doesn't bounce right, but – Yeah, I don't know. It's just the way the league's gone, and I guess the numbers don't lie. I don't know. Part of me would love to see a Curtis Joseph stature guy with quick reflexes making up for everything.
I think UC Soros.
I guess those days are over.
I think UC Soros is maybe one of the last of the guys. Like the thing is about and why I like UC Soros so much. I feel like when I watch UC Soros play, I'm actually watching another goalie. I'm not watching the same guy because I feel like they're all the same size. I mean, there are the dudes that are the upper echelon, the Connor Hollebucks, the Vasilevskis, and those guys are just ridiculous. But they're that middle where most of the goalies stick and stay. Most of these teams are interchangeable. Yep. So, UC Soros plays a little bit more of that throwback.
His legs are extremely fast. And that's, I think, what makes him successful at and play as well as some of these much bigger guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, like goalie guru stuff would tell you, like, that's all nice. It's fun to watch. I know why you like watching that little guy dart around, but do the stats, look at it smaller. And even just from playing, less is more sometimes. You know, when the guy looks like the puck is always coming to him, it's maybe because he's big, but it's also because of good positioning. Sure. And so the smaller guy has to catch up with that. And positioning is so much more important. They get out of position.
Yeah, you know, like,
it's a bad day.
There's a reason that the styles of the Marty Brodeurs were what was taught and not the style of Dominic Hasek. There's a reason that. You know, one is much more efficient. So, but yeah, Juuse Saros, I do enjoy watching him play. Again, unless you can get an extension done before a trade for him, so I think as far as the Uncle Puckers stand of where we are on coach, prerequisite, they absolutely have to have a Stanley Cup. And secondly, with goaltending, they absolutely have not, they have got to have an extension or be here for longer than a year.
Right.
Like, we can't give away the farm for Tom Fitzgerald, big game hunting for Juuse Saros to walk out the door next year.
Yeah. I think, you know, that would be like the kiss of death for his, you know, to give away a bunch of assets and then the guy's gone.
Yeah. So it's got to be Markstrom, or you got to work out an extension with Juuse Saros. And we know what? We'll dive a little bit into Brisson and Ullmark's contract on the next show. And we'll talk to the guys because it's getting a little late. So I think we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to go finish watching the Devil game. I'm sure you're going to do the same.
Yep. Absolutely.
Wherever you guys are listening to us, we do, first of all, thank you. We really appreciate it. Gotten some really nice feedback from some listeners lately. And just so you guys know, you all know who you are. We appreciate the hell out of you guys. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And so a like, a 5-star review, a download, subscription, goes a long way to help the little podcast that could. For Dan and Chris, we are the Uncle Puckers. Go watch South Park if you want to know where we got our name from. And we'll see you when we see it.
Puckers out.